The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.
What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode. We are speaking with Rihanna Manuel. She is the senior content manager at G4 TV. She also collaborates with What's Good Games. Rihanna, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. This is already a fun intro. Like, I'm really excited for this conversation.
Okay. So let's go. Let's go. I just want to chill. I just want to have a good time. And I also want to have existential value to the conversation.
Okay. No pressure.
I think you're wise and you have the information to share as well when it comes to what you've learned in the space of marketing. And also in the healthcare background that you do have. So I think that you have a lot of value to bring an area of servitude and also how people look at brands as well as individual content creators. So I think that you are the perfect person to have that conversation. And even in the spaces that you travel, whether that's the new Twitter spaces stuff or those kind of environments where you've been adding value as well. So I'm excited to have you on. I'm just hyped. Okay. I have an angle that I want to go, but at the same time, I want to free flow and have the conversation with you in regards to your background, your journey, how we got from your genealogy to where you are now. So, Rihanna, how are you?
I am well. Dealing with a lot right now, you know, personally, professionally, it's always a struggle, especially in times of COVID and quarantine, but you know, just trying to manage everything, trying to balance everything, trying to stay focused, stay humble, and stay in touch with people. And that's the reason why, like, before we started recording, you asked me why I said yes when you reached out to have a conversation. And connecting with humans has become so important to me personally, and I know to a lot of people around the world, with everything that's been going on. And every time I have a chance to have a conversation with somebody that I don't know, I jump at it. As long as it's safe, because it's really good to know where other folks are at and what they're thinking and how they're perceiving everything that's going on. We personally here haven't left this apartment much in the last year, or at least since we moved here in November.
Congratulations on that.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks. And yeah, it's really important to me to know how other folks are feeling and what's going on with their lives. So yeah, I'm really excited to be talking to you today.
So I'm a dude on the internet. What made this safe?
What made it safe was a vouch. And I am a huge proponent of a vouch system, honestly. And I know networking can be a little bit tricky. It is systemically favoring certain folks who don't look like you or me. However, love of my life, Godfrey, Danny Pena said, like, oh yeah, he's a good dude. You should talk to him. So that's all I needed.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So I'm trying to figure out which pivotal moment in your life that I want to go with. Okay. Because there's been many. I don't know what the year was when you fell in love with dance. So we can talk a little bit about that and then fast forward to maybe 2013, 2014, when you were making the greatest decision to pivot your professional career. Right. That's accurate.
Yeah, that's pretty spot on. And, you know, as a dancer, I've had many pivots in my life. Yeah. The love of dance, it was always in me. I was born with it. My mom's sister, my aunt, likes to tell a story. Like, the first time she met me, I was, you know, sitting in a little stroller and I was doing a little dance as I strolled up to her because I just couldn't contain myself. Like, anytime I'm excited, I have a physical expression. And it is one of the ways that I choose to communicate. And it's one of the ways I communicate most accurately what I'm feeling. And it's something that has always been in my life. I've never not danced. I may have never not always danced publicly. But it's something that is 100% part of who I am.
Yeah. So what year would you say that started? Like if you could, if there was an actual year, would you, for the chronology of that?
Okay. Let's say when I started walking, maybe around 1989.
Wow. Okay.
Somewhere around there. I mean, as soon as I could balance, I was in a dance class.
That's awesome.
So it was the first group activity that I ever participated in was a dance class, and I basically never stopped.
That's awesome. So I watched some of that journey because it's recorded on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's definitely something.
You went digging to find that too. That's impressive.
I'm trying to figure out, doesn't everybody do this? Is that the point to highlight the guest that's coming on? You have to kind of know something about them. So I think that's what we're supposed to be doing, right? So I did do some digging because I wanted to understand your personality, your background, what you were passionate about, what you didn't like, you know, those kind of things. And I think that it makes the conversation more comfortable for you. And usually what happens with that is once you see that it's not necessarily a gotcha kind of conversations, you know what I'm saying? Dig in for information for the current project that you're working on, stuff like that, right? Then mm-hmm. It's like, oh, okay. So this is just we're cooling out. We're having a conversation. It tends to be a little bit easier.
Yeah. It's very, very well appreciated. Honestly, I don't talk enough about dance, and I'm excited to have that conversation with you too.
So tell me more. So tell me more about dance.
Yeah. Dance is one of my love languages. It's the way that I connect with people when I can't speak or when I don't choose to speak, when there's something that doesn't have words that I need to get out. It's the thing that's in me that when I have a very intense feeling, I have to move through it. That's the only way that I can actually process some things is dancing. And that has manifested in things that are public, obviously. And sometimes it doesn't happen in the public eye. There's a lot of times where I am sad and I move in order to process that. There's a lot of times where I'm feeling grief or I'm feeling disappointment, frustration, anger, or joy. I always dance when I'm happy, especially when I'm eating something very delicious. So it's just, again, it's part of the language of Rihanna. It's part of what I do when I'm feeling things. And I need to talk about it more. I'm realizing now, even just in this short conversation we've had so far, it's such a huge part of my life that I don't share a lot.
And because?
I don't know that people want to know that much about me. I sort of doubt the level of interest people have in who I am.
I do. Let's do it.
Yeah?
Yeah, why not?
All right. Well, yeah. I mean, dance for me manifested in classes, which of course, dance mom style turned into competing. So dance competition was an entire subculture that I was a huge part of in my early years, all the way through graduating from high school. In college, I helped found a dance group at my school called Black Dance Workshop, and which I choreographed for, starred in. We did productions. I ended up becoming one of the board members, later one of the chairs. And then finally, as we sort of graduated from school, we just kept dancing together and actually founded a dance company for a couple of years and held our own original production where we found the venue, scouted dancers, like had auditions and, you know, practice and put on a show in a theater. And I never imagined myself doing any of those things, but I needed to dance so badly. And I needed to dance with the people that I connected with through dance so badly that it just started snowballing into larger and larger efforts. And it was one of the best experiences of my life. And it's the first time I had any experience producing something as content. And that was a real pivotal moment for me, for sure.
I like weird questions after a long segment like that you just gave. When you look in the mirror, what do you see?
I see a smile, usually. I see my eyes. I love my eyes. I'm a big fan of them. They're a little big, but I have beautiful eyelashes. And I really love how expressive I am when I'm looking at myself and when I can communicate an emotion to someone else. Nonverbal contact a lot.
Do you see someone adding value to the world?
I see someone who's ready to tell a story, and it may not be my own all the time. Sometimes I connect better with people when I'm telling someone else's story, when I'm sharing an experience that isn't my own. but I do see myself as an educator, as a storyteller for sure.
Okay. Do you see yourself telling everybody else's story more than your own?
Sometimes I feel more comfortable telling other people's stories.
And going back to what you said before, do you don't think people want to hear your story?
I don't know. That's I never thought about
not the kind of interview that you were expecting, right?
No, this is fantastic. I am so on board with this. Oh my gosh.
Let's do it.
No, it's like interview/therapy. No, I never thought about what my story could do for other people. And this goes back to just the concept in general of service. Like, I always just want to make the world a better place. I want people to expand their own perspectives and experiences. I want everybody to connect with each other more because we have so much more in common than we have that are different. And it's, I don't know how much of my story is helpful there, but
so how would
I've
you
learned
know?
Probably more than I think, right?
How would you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm the only person who knows my own story.
Yeah, but how would you know if it would bless or change the trajectory of someone's life if...
I wouldn't. I guess I don't know until I try.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been trying to do that more. And that's actually honestly one of the reasons why I started streaming this year. Because wonderful people in my life, just like you, have been telling me I should probably share my story more.
Oh, so yeah. So let's put a pin there for one second. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm always nervous doing the expose of my guest, right?
Okay.
Because we believe that we can watch a lot of content and learn a lot about somebody, mm-hmm. but the person that you're learning about could say, well, what you think you know is completely wrong, right?
Very true. Right? Happens a lot.
So it's like, okay, can we really learn from the podcast, the roundtables and things like that? So I gave you a couple of things. Uh-huh. That I saw, there was a common thread in who you are and how you present yourself online, and not saying that, and I have to be careful with that because the caveat to that is you are presenting yourself authentically online, but we do reserve sections of ourselves for the privacy of our homes and things like that. So I have to be completely mm-hmm. fair with that, right? So I really noticed towards the last maybe month, or so, I'll say 6 months to present day, you've been mm-hmm. a little bit more vocal than usual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have.
Yeah. So what happened?
I worked through a lot of personal stuff. I don't know if I should curse. I worked through a lot of personal stuff that was really messed up.
Okay. PG-13. So thank you for that.
Okay. No worries. Just always be safe. I worked through a lot of stuff that was holding me back from being open. I was worried how people would perceive me, like all of me. And I was worried about what that could do to my career, to be honest. And these are worries and concerns that were 100% from me, not ever from any sort of employer or any previous experience. This was all my upbringing. I was taught to be careful, to be perfect, to excel, to never let people see me sweat or cry or struggle. To be twice as good, to get half as far. These are things that were drilled into me as part of my upbringing and my education, both in the home and in school, and in excellence programs that my mom put me in. These are things that I learned that had to be a part of my personality, my brand, in order to be successful. And through therapy and a bad relationship that ended and lots of work that I did with myself, I learned that not a lot of that is true. I can be myself and still be successful. I can be myself and still be accepted. And dare I say, it's even better to be myself because it opens me up to so many more conversations and possibilities. So it's a journey. It's hard. It's really hard to be open and vulnerable, but I'm trying to do it more. I am.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of people are really being blessed by that as you're doing that. The other thing that we talked about earlier before we started, listener versus talker, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that I noticed that a lot of people are, you are very insightful. And we mentioned that you kind of like wait till things are wrapping up to mm-hmm. open the floodgates. right?
What? Just like a big, huge bomb. Yeah, at
the by the way, guys, I got a lot of things to share with you because we're about to wrap it up, but I'm going to give you some wisdom for the ages because you're about to leave. But that's not the right word. So let me think about that for a second. You're always ready to share and you're still trying to find, the balance of, are you ready for what I'm going to tell you? With the combination of, are you taking me seriously as I'm telling you? So it's kind of like weird. It's like, I know I have information to give you because of the spaces that I've been, because, you know, the masters, the health, background, the product marketing background, whether that was the Ori or the other games that you've participated in, the panels that you've been on, the circles that you've walked in. So you have the information to share, but at the same time, and there's nothing wrong with handpicking who you share it with, because, I think that that's a guard as well as, time waster, right? You don't want to waste your time. But yet you're ready to give it. So I'm fascinated by, by you. I'm fascinated by you in that regard of what I've heard from the conversation that you had in the past. So having said all that, where are you at now as it relates to, sharing information that you know is going to leave a lasting impact to the world? Because I realize that you do that in small spurts.
Yeah. The why is still a question mark for me, to be completely transparent. I do default to listener, even though I'm a Gemini and an only child and whatever stereotypes you want to put in front of me, I should be a talker. I really should. And I love talking to people, but I love hearing what other people have to say, how other people are receiving the information coming at them, how they've interpreted the experiences that they've gone through, because I always want to know more. I always want to learn more. I always want to have a broader perspective myself. And so I think that's a lot of the reason why I pause. I don't know why I pause so long. I feel like I shouldn't.
What do you mean?
Pause and let other people talk instead of me. First of all, I mean, I don't like interrupting people. I want to know what they're thinking. I want to let them get to the point of what they're saying. Some people take a bit of a long flowery road to get to the final point. And I hate interrupting folks. I really don't want to disrupt anyone's train of thought. But there's so many times when as they're saying something, I'm like, ooh, but okay, what if? And all of that just kind of piles up in my brain as I'm listening to people and taking in what they're saying and their body language and how they're feeling about it and noticing those slight, subtle nonverbal cues. And that's why I have that bomb at the end where I'm like, you know what? Would wrap this up? This sentence, there it is. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, like, it takes taking in the perspectives and inputs and reactions from others to get me there, because I really am very reactive when I'm, I guess, coming up with these truths and these insights, because I can't be insightful on my own. I don't know everything. I don't know nearly enough to be
completely comprehensive. Why don't you think that you can be insightful on your own? What do you mean?
I'm just one person, and the collective is so much stronger. The voice of the collective, the needs of the collective, the beliefs of the collective is so much stronger than just my own personal story.
I agree.
And I would rather we focus on that.
I agree, but most of the time you're not with the collective.
That's true. Good counterpoint.
Right?
Good counterpoint.
So what do we do with the information that you're reading and the books that you're reading and the tapes that you're listening to and the functions that you're going to? What will we do with that information?
It's tough. I try to condense. I try to coagulate. I try my best to streamline it into one narrative. A lot of times it doesn't work. And I am constantly changing my mind on how I feel about things.
Yeah.
I'm constantly trying to challenge the way my mind has been made up on things, because I know it's probably never going to be 100% right or wrong. That's probably impossible. But I like to do whatever I can to understand the most about as many people as possible. And that's where I get very broad, and it's very difficult to do, but it's work that I'm committed to, because I want to try to understand and connect with everybody that I possibly can.
So when did you come to the conclusion of do more of what you love? When did that happen?
I was in Target and I saw a sign. This was, I want to say around, when was it? I want to say maybe around like fall of last year. no, not last year, 2 years ago, 2019, I was shopping for office furniture with my mom and doing a makeover of my space because it was looking like I might have more opportunity to work from home. Funny that I was thinking that in 2019 and now here we are.
Right.
But yeah, I was just looking for things that are inspiring, things that spoke to me. And it's a sign that said, do more of what you love. And it took me back to that moment, 2014, when I said, I don't want to be in healthcare. I want to help people so badly. And this is not the best way for me to do it. And I chose to make a complete career shift and go into gaming, which was a hard left turn for a lot of people in my personal life. But it's really what forced me to do what I did. It's like, I love the storytelling medium and I love bringing experiences to people that can really truly allow them to connect and empathize with others and connect with people on such a raw, visceral level. Like while they're facing challenge, while they're failing at something together, like there's so many formative relationships that can come of that. And I knew I had to be part of that industry. I had loved it my entire life, as much as I love dance. And I knew I wanted to do that instead of wrestling with our broken healthcare system.
What was your first system that you that inspired you?
It's right there. The over there, the NES, the action set. I got it with the guns and with Duck Hunt.
Nice.
I was about three and a half, four years old.
Okay. Same. I think my cousin had TurboGrafx-16. So I watched him play games on that, but first actual system for me was the Nintendo system. So it changed everything. It really did.
I forced my mom to keep a CRT in our old home, just in case I ever want to play Duck Hunt.
it's amazing what games have done. So at this point in the conversation, someone's wondering, hey, when are you going to talk about G4, bro? I'm not here for this stuff. I'm here for G4. You do realize that Rihanna can't really talk a lot about G4 right now, right?
I can talk a little about it. We've released some content.
But not a lot, right? Like not the juicy stuff that people really want to see, right?
Like when we're launching, no, I can't tell you that. Only Rona can tell you that. She's keeping us all hostage right now. We're trying to get in the studios safely. So
right.
Yeah, right. There's a lot of things that a lot of people don't know that we wish we did, but I can talk about, you know, in general, what G4 is doing, you know, the kind of content we hope to make, the kind of people we want to reach. And honestly, it's a little bit of everybody. Anybody who loves games is welcome on G4.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what you're going to be doing there. Seriously. I used to love watching the show. So I'm excited to see. To see that. So let's go back to you though. Let's go back to you. So did you find your voice or are you still looking for it?
Still looking for it. Okay. And again, that's why I started streaming. And I really want to have conversations with more people and then work on speaking on my own. That's something that I'm not 100% comfortable doing yet. And something I'm practicing at.
Commentary streaming stuff or like this?
More like this, honestly. Okay. I mean, commentary streaming is great. Like I have opinions about stuff that happens in gaming and that's wonderful. I would like to talk about other stuff too. And things that really matter and things that really touch people, because there's other people out there in the world who I've heard speak and they've touched me. And I would just want to be able to be there as a beacon for a message for all of the things that we could do better as a people, as individuals, as gamers, as humans.
And great segue. You're good.
To be part of that message.
You're good at this. You're really good at this. Okay. Yeah. So Rihanna, so let's talk about, diversity, equity, and inclusion. That's a perfect
words.
That's a perfect segue for that, right? So your birthday is in May.
It is.
25th.
It is, yes.
Okay. I did my homework. Okay. I'm feeling good. Good job.
You're good.
Good job. It is the same day of that horrific event that the trial started for today at the day of recording, right?
Yes. The murder of George Floyd.
Correct. how are you feeling right now based on this happened to work the way it did? I don't know why it worked out that we're recording on the day that, you know, the trial started for that. Yeah. But definitely talk about, and you've done a lot of work in this area, diversity and speaking up for individuals who may not necessarily have their voices right now, and encouraging them to speak about things that matter to them. So give us a little bit on that.
Yeah, that moment was not new. It was nothing I hadn't seen before, nothing I hadn't been through as a Black person in America before, but it was the first time that the rest of the world reacted the way that they did. And that came with a lot of complicated emotions for me personally. While yes, it was wonderful to see a groundswell of support and action and involvement from people of all races, it was really frustrating that it took a global pandemic to make that happen and that we're still dealing with it. We're still not seeing justice. We're still not seeing change.
Whatever's in the microwave, I want it.
Oh, that's Danny. Danny doing the microwave over there.
But at any rate, yeah, and even during that time, you listened more to other demographics in relation to how you are feeling, which is the demographic that was affected. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
This guy. I'll get
He's
him.
He's hungry.
I'll text him at all hours of the night. This guy. You chose to do that because why?
I have a very complicated relationship with being a Black person in America. I grew up very privileged. I grew up very fortunate and blessed. I come from a family who at a certain time was light-skinned enough to pass for white in Kentucky and in Cincinnati, Ohio. I come from a lineage of both slaves and slave owners. And it is not something that was a very large part of my life as a child. My dad is darker skinned. My mom is more fair skinned. I think like cardboard box, like brown paper bag color, especially now that she lives in Las Vegas. But I had not been brought up to really own my Blackness. Outside of the fact that I knew it was part of me, it was not something that was part of my education. You know, I learned about George Washington Carver and, you know, Rosa Parks, like the Fred Hampton. Those are things that were obviously part of my own private education and as a Black kid. But outside of that, I wasn't taught how to explain that to the world or how to interact with the world as a Black person. It's like you see a cop, you be quiet, you do what they say, you comply, you give them no reason to have any reaction to you other than that's a person, that's a bystander. Outside of that, I was really not told how to be an activist or how to be an ally, despite the fact that my grandmother was an activist and was part of the NAACP. Mm. So that's an interesting gap in my early education that I'm trying to make up for now, which is why a lot of times I choose to listen. Because yes, I'm Black. Yes, I'm a woman, but I don't know everything about what it's like to be that.
Okay, so I definitely could relate somewhat to the experience of the disconnection, if you will. Reason being is whenever I had an interaction with an officer, it was mostly positive, even when they told me to get out the car. Mm-hmm. Like one example I've shared on a podcast before was I made an infraction, right? So I went out and came back in a lane where there was a double line on the highway. Mm-hmm. So when the cop pulled me over, he said, "Do you know what you did?" I was like, "No, I did, you know, the right thing." He was like, "No, you didn't. Get out the car so I can go show you where the infraction was." So he literally wanted me to get out of the car so he can take a walk with me. To go show me where the infraction was. So when I hear people have challenges, yeah, I've been in handcuffs before and that situation was my fault. But most of the other situations, I can't necessarily relate, right? because I don't have those experiences. So that I understand. But going back to what you said before, what's the point here? Going back to what you said before, you were taught the basics on the experience of blackness, if you will. Twice as more that you need to work to get the same amount of respect, or maybe you may hit the lobby, right?
Yeah.
Right. So you have that particular experience. So do you feel like you needed more of that to understand as you're stepping into your blackness, if that makes any sense? I think it does in the context of what we're talking about. Yeah. So what's happening there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have an even more unique situation where my dad was a prison warden growing up, and my parents are divorced. I didn't live with him for my entire childhood, but I always understood police to be the people my dad bosses around. So there was a bit of an interesting angle there. I also went to Catholic private all-girls school. So anytime I was pulled over for speeding or whatever stupid thing I was doing, I was in my uniform and they knew I was an Ursuline student. And so there was, again, an inherent privilege that I've walked through the world with that I did not outwardly recognize until I started talking with my family. Until I started connecting with my cousins, especially my male cousins, and especially my darker skinned male cousins, who have not had that privilege walking through the world, who have not had that experience when they were pulled over. It's been interesting because colorism is something that I don't think the world is really ready to talk about, or at least they haven't shown that they're ready to talk about it. But even within my own family, most of my family is lighter skinned than me, and they have an inherent deference that they're treated with. Compared to our darker skinned family, when they walk through the world, a lot of them have curly hair, straight hair, instead of kinky curly hair like I do. And they are treated differently because of that appearance. And that's something that I have been working through and understanding better, especially after what happened on my birthday last year to George Floyd. And especially after the rest of the world started paying more attention. There are a lot of voices out there that weren't very visible or very loud before that have been louder. I've started to add mine as well, as you mentioned, in the last few months. But it was important for me to make sure I understood what else was going on before I spoke up. And those are some of the reasons why.
And that's interesting, too, because you don't think you had enough data already based on your life experiences.
I knew I didn't have enough. I knew I didn't have enough.
Mm-hmm. So what have you concluded or summarized thus far based on the experiences of your family members and how you're viewing the world now through your lens of, we'll say, blackness?
Yeah, similar to healthcare, the system is broken. It's broken on purpose. It works for a certain group of people exactly as it was intended to, and it doesn't work for many more, and it should. And I don't know what the solution is. I've looked into abolishment of the police, which a lot of it I can't get on board with. A lot of it is very not practical, and a lot of it will just never happen because of who is in power and because of who wants to stay in power. And I understand when I'm looking at something that seems like a losing battle, I think the best way forward is to change tactics, because ultimately we should all be on the same side. And that's a difficult concept when some people don't think that we should have rights. And so I'm still working through that. It's really tough.
So two things happened when you said that. We should all be on the same side, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that I was thinking about the global aspect of that, mm-hmm. right? And then the subset of that for me is the gaming side of that.
Yeah.
Right? So has there been any progress made on either side, you'd say?
In general, acceptance of folks who are typically othered in gaming, it has definitely been improving. And only because of efforts of people who are outwardly fighting for it, right? You have organizations like Able Gamers, you have folks like Steve Saylor, Steven Spahn, or people who are fighting for trans rights, and just visibility and additional funds and effort going into telling stories from marginalized creators and showing other lived experiences outside of a white cis-het marine warrior. Those things are happening. and they are making changes as part of the team that helped launch Tell Me Why to critical acclaim and pretty much worldwide praise. We had very little blowback for the choice to make a AAA trans character. Obviously, indie games have made huge strides in that space long before Xbox and Don't Nod did, but this was a larger stage. Thinking of that compared to the reception of Lev, a character in The Last of Us 2 that released just months before, being very negative in a lot of instances, it lets me know that there is definitely progress being made, and it's only because of specific, explicit efforts of the teams that are bringing these stories to life. But we got a long way to go. We definitely have a long way to go because there's room for improvement. There's even more stories to tell and even more people to bring into the fold, because guess what? They love games. Like, that's a good thing. We want to celebrate that with everyone.
Mm. So the latter game that you mentioned, do you think they were too hard on the story in terms of the way the reception of that particular story for Last of Us?
I think there's a lot of reasons why that reception was the way it was. The fact that Lev's character was not discussed because of spoiler reasons, or it wasn't allowed to be discussed by people who were reviewing the game, made it very difficult. Laura Kate Dale has a really great piece on that. If you want to do a little bit research of her thoughts on it, Lev of the character was dead named. You heard Lev's original name in the game. That is something that is very triggering to a lot of folks in the trans community. So there are just a few things that maybe in hindsight could have been handled differently. Maybe more upfront explanation about that character and how they were presented and why. Maybe more information about how that character was brought to life, like by the voice actor who is a young trans male. Like just giving some more credence to that authenticity could have helped, but again, like it happened, and hindsight is 2020, right? We did take a lot of lessons from that as we released our game and Tell Me Why, and tried to do it as authentically and transparently as possible. And I think a lot of those learnings did help. And hopefully that's something that can be taken into the future in the next portrayal of a trans character, or the next portrayal of a Black character, or a Hindi character, or what have you. Like you should always try to have the voices who have those lived experiences in the room when you're creating the character that's going to be on screen and in people's hands, because it really does make a difference. And representation is just that. It should represent the people who are making the game as much as it represents the people who are playing it.
Okay. How are you feeling right now?
Good. I'm a little out of breath because I get very passionate talking about that game. Yeah. It's a special place in my heart.
All right. You okay? You want to take a couple of seconds? You want to relax?
I'll take water.
Okay.
It's my BPA free water bottle.
All right.
How are you feeling? Are you good?
I'm great. I think you're dope.
I think you're dope.
I think you need to share more because you have so much insights to give to the world. And I think that you're doing yourself a disservice if you don't share the things that you're passionate about, because there will be somebody. We never know when that happens, right? So we talked about mm-hmm. the existential value. There will be somebody who will be inspired by the things that you said, right?
Yeah, I'm learning that.
What's sad to me is that someone has to pass away before you appreciate their catalog.
Mm.
Right.
Yeah. Give them their roses while they're alive.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you believed what they shared or what they produced, whatever format that is, was inspiring, and you had the opportunity to tell them, you know, why didn't you tell them? Right. Mm-hmm. So it's like, why are you reading? It's not funny, but let me frame this all on you one second. Why are you reading a poem at the casket?
Mm.
Doesn't make sense to me. It never did. Even as a younger young man, right? It never made sense mm-hmm. to me that you're reading a poem at a casket for someone who can't hear it anymore, right? So I salute you. I salute you for speaking up and being bold in those conversations and doing a shimmy when you don't have the words. And so I definitely appreciate that. So what frustrates you in the community right now, gaming community?
I mean,
okay. All right. Wait, one second. We're going to take a break for another water real quick.
Yeah. Let me get ready for this conversation. Okay. Hold on.
Ooh, that seems like it's hot. Okay. All right.
If I would have to say one thing.
Now give me two.
Two things. Entitlement and where people choose to put their energy. Mm. Those two things frustrate me quite a bit. Those are the two things that I see where I have to log off for a little bit.
Entitlement and where people choose to put their energy. Okay. All right. Talk to me. All right.
Yeah. It's
tell me more.
Any game becoming a thing that you can put into a console or download on your PC and play is a freaking miracle. It's so hard to make a video game. It takes so many people and so much time and so much money. And yes, it gets messed up. And yes, people make mistakes. And yes, it'll get marketed incorrectly. Or you won't understand what you're playing before you buy it. Or they may, you know, put it out with a whole bunch of bugs. But guess what? They didn't mean to. I promise you, nobody wanted it to be anything less than what you were hoping for. And that it's so frustrating to see things get review bombed or developers being targeted and harassed. Pizza's ready. And anything other than praise, anything other than gratitude, anything other than I know you need more time, but you know, just take it because I appreciate that you're delaying it in order to get it to where you think it needs to be before you put it out. That's the only response that makes sense to me. Knowing what I know about game dev, and I get it. Not a lot of people have as close an eye on it as I have had, or anybody who follows the industry closely, but it is so frustrating to see the amount of vitriol when a video game comes out and people don't like it. It's just, why even focus that hard on it?
Why do you think that's hard to understand?
Because I don't spew hate. If I don't like something, I'm usually quiet about it online. I discuss it with friends, of course. You know, I got a group chat where I talk a lot of smack about all kinds of things because we need an outlet. It's only reasonable that you have a place where you complain. But I don't like the idea of spreading complaints and letting them grow and fester and gain traction to the point where you're literally harassing individuals for the job that they do. That is the part that I cannot possibly fathom. I can't.
Okay. So that's entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then number two?
I mean, it's very, very related, like where people choose to put their energy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I love goofiness and fighting over, you know, who makes the best ribs or, you know, my console's green, yours is blue. Ha ha. It can be fun, absolutely, to poke fun at things, to say, this is how you share a game on Xbox versus this is how you share a game on PlayStation. It's hilarious. Like, there's definitely a fun to be had with memes of, this looks like a refrigerator, this looks like a Wi-Fi router. Like, that's great. But when people get to the point where they're literally, like, looking up somebody's content and accusing them of being bought off and sending their sphere of influence after another person because they don't like their opinion on something. It's like, how do you have that much energy for anything other than what you got to get through in the day? Because I don't have it, honestly. Like, I barely got enough energy to take my allergy meds and wash my face before I go to sleep. You know, I don't understand where it comes from. And I understand it's just a personality difference at its core. But the fact that people go out of their way to criticize and harass, like, I really just don't get it. And it frustrates me to see, people putting out effort to further anything other than good, because we have so much bad in the world. We need so much more good to balance it out. And I get really disappointed when people choose to do the other thing.
So do you believe that you're building the confidence to get to a place to speak about these things in the future? Like, how do you feel about those things to speak out about it, whether that's a Twitter Spaces or any other formats or anything like that?
Yeah, format's still TBD. I am getting more confident, and I would not see myself holding a platform or taking up space in order to tell people what to do. I don't think that that's my lane. And I wouldn't want to try to dictate what others feel they need to do in order to get through the day. I get it. Maybe you need to just let off some steam. Maybe it's not for me, but it's fine. what I really wish that I was ready to do was to share the way that I've chosen to interact with the world to see if maybe it's a better option that people haven't considered yet. Something that I've struggled with and that I'm, again, working on is recognizing that I do have original ideas that no one has thought of yet. A lot of times, you know, you have like, you have a moment where you're like, what if there was this machine that made bread into toast? It would be great. And you're like, oh, they've already thought of that. It's a toaster. I do that with almost every thought I have. Someone's already thought of that. And sometimes they haven't. And if they have, maybe they're not in the space that I am that they can share it the way that I could. And that's something that I'm working on getting better at, is sharing my thoughts, sharing my ideas, sharing my approach to things, because it could be helpful to someone. And that's ultimately all I want to do.
Absolutely. I agree with that. So I would like for you to tear this up a little bit. I'm going to make a statement. You tell me if it's accurate. Okay. So let's see. Here goes. Okay. So marketing is the packaging. Okay. Sales is closing the deal. Tear that up a little bit. Let me know. Is it sound?
Quite. Not quite. I would say marketing is more like the testimonial, and sales is more like the transaction.
Okay.
The marketing is the why. It's the friend recommendation. It's the, oh, if you like this, you'd like this. That's the way I've approached marketing. I know the two are different, and I know it's hard for a lot of people to rationalize how. But sales really tells you, like, I don't know as much about sales as I do as marketing, so this may even be off. But sales is more the technical, the how, the let's get this done. You're ready to make a deal. This is the transaction. Marketing.
Okay. So would that be closing the deal? Is that,
yeah?
Would that be
closing
fair?
The deal? Sure, closing the deal, but more like the paperwork.
Gotcha.
I would say marketing is more like, what got you in the door? Like, why did you even come here? Why did you think this was cool? What would I get out of this if I was interested in it? That's how marketing has always presented to me.
Okay. I like it. I dig it. So when for the individuals who are getting into a space to create their own platforms, whether that's a big brand that they're representing versus representing themselves, if you were to give them advice on how to do that correctly, what would you tell them?
I tell them to focus on the story. Like, what story are you telling? Are you telling people about something that they need? Are you telling people something that worked for you? Are you telling them, like, hey, if you come interact with my content, here's what you're going to get? Like, think about the story that you're leaving people with as you talk to them. Because everything should really drive to a beginning, a middle, and end, right? This is where you're coming in. This is what you're going to find out about it. And here's what you're going to leave with. I would say that's my biggest recommendation for developing any kind of messaging.
Love it. Okay, so we're going to talk about games real quick before we close out. We're almost done. So this is the part where I say, is there anything that you really want to touch on that before this conversation closes that you'd love to touch on before we talk about games and before we start closing out?
Yeah, I would love to know, what led you down this path? I'm curious because I've never had a conversation like this one where somebody was so prepared and knew so many things about my past, and it has been riveting, honestly. And I'm curious to know how you got here.
How I got here with you?
How you got to this process?
Okay, so now it's time to be vulnerable. So now I have to be transparent. Okay, so that's fair. So I've always been the one that was made fun of because I didn't understand English growing up. Because I spent a lot of time in Haiti. My parents are Haitian. That makes me Haitian. So when it was time to come back to America for schooling, I had a very tough time to understand English, how people talk, vernacular, and things like that. So it became a passion of mine to really understand how people communicated. And I really went into a deep study of human behavior, just like on a day-to-day, just watching people, seeing how they communicate. Went into a very deep dive of the Charles in Charge, Who's the Boss, Days of Our Lives, Guiding Light, All My Children, right? So I was watching all these shows to see how people interactive. So it's interactive. So the masters did it so well that if it looked natural. So I studied the masters, right? Whether that was Susan Lucci, you can go down the list of all the individuals that, that has been on screen, right? Denzel Washington, go down the list, right? And things like that. So once I felt very comfortable, you know, with English, even though I was born in Brooklyn, New York, right? So I was born here, but I had trouble there. People made fun of me there. So now they call that bullying now, right? But I didn't realize it was bullying then. They were just making fun of me. My feelings were hurt. I had to figure out how to make it better, right? So over time, that became, bless you.
Oh, thank you. Sorry.
You're welcome. I just want to make sure. So over time, that became a serious passion of mine to understand how people behave and interacted. And I started excelling at that, where I could learn a lot about somebody very quickly, and they don't understand how that came about, right? So so the mastery started in the 90s, maybe 80s, as it relates to human behavior and things like that. The podcast started in 2009, where I sat down and said, you know what? I believe that I could start a show and honor the individuals who showed me how to, you know, podcast, whether that's Godfrey or Vicious or, you know, Post Game Report, JVB, those guys, you know. So I wanted to honor those individuals, but at the same time, I was still building the skill set of human behavior. So fast forward to church background, right? So I'm a born again believer. So that has put me in front of individuals to do sermons, right? So I'm able to preach messages to them. So seeing that interaction, and if you're in the faith community, you understand that once you become a born again believer, you get spiritual gifts from the Holy Spirit. So I know that's getting a little technical for the individuals who are probably going to, you know, click out of here at this point. But those gifts amplify things that you already do well. That's what they do, right? So if you administrate well, those gifts will amplify that administration. If you're a great orator, that amplified skill would be, you know, leveled up, right? So so things like that. So then I started realizing that I never really miss on my summary of the person, right? But you gave me data already because you've been on shows. So now I'm really looking at the information and trying to connect dots that I don't have information for, right? So when you tell me that I read you like a book, have you met me already? That's encouraging to me, because that goes, that takes me back to all the days where people didn't really appreciate me as a communicator to this place now, where I can literally communicate with anybody around the world. And I'm proud of that. So that's how I got here. That's how I got here. So podcasting, you make mistakes, fail. You get some wins, 100 episodes. So we're at over 500 episodes at this point. I'm proud of that. So, you know, I'm glad that I'm able to just, you know, have conversations with dope people like you. So that's how I got here. So
very fascinating. Wow. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. I hope that, I shared some insight for you. So yeah, so it's still something that I struggle with. Like, so you talked about, you know, certain things that you struggle with even now as you're trying to find your voice. I still feel like people underestimate my ability to understand consumer behavior and human behavior and how things, and it's experiential, right? So it's how it makes me feel, but it's like I'm not reading scripts, but I'm watching takes. That's what it is for me. I'm watching takes of human behavior. And every time I watch it, I'm like, no, you should have said this. Right. So it's like I'm watching different movies and I'm studying and I'm like summarizing how it should have played out versus how it did. And if it, you know, so that's how my brain kind of works when it comes to that stuff.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. So that's
so insightful. Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you. So gaming, you are playing Apex.
Yes. Lots of big cats.
You love Borderlands?
Yes.
Okay.
Borderlands 2.
Yeah. Good game. I don't know what happened with the third one. So I'm still trying to maybe give it a chance at some point. Okay.
I want them all.
Right. You've been streaming, as you mentioned. Do you like it?
I do. I don't feel pressured or beholden to have any sort of consistent schedule, which I think is probably unique to a lot of larger streamers out there who definitely are more prolific and consistent than I am. But I do enjoy having conversations with people. I like seeing people jump in and say something like, oh, I never thought about playing this, or it's interesting your take on, you know, this or that. Again, it's that feedback, it's that human connection, it's that additional data for someone else's experience that I'm really fascinated by, and that's why I keep streaming.
I want to get into Apex, but I don't know how. So what's the easiest way to kind of like start, like checking it out and stuff?
Play. I mean, there's one game mode for the most part. It's Battle Royale. You know, find a couple people maybe who know how to play to help lead you through it. I would say spend some time training with a few different characters to see who seems to move the way that you like. Different characters have different perceived movement speeds, different sizes of hitboxes. Their individual legend abilities in ultimates will definitely dictate what playstyle suits best. So I would say trial and error and find some friends. It's my best recommendation.
Okay. What's your self-talk like throughout the day as you're navigating, you know, some of the projects that you're currently working on, things that you can talk about, things you can't talk about? Like what's the game time motivation conversations happening within?
Great question. And many, many years ago, I read a book called What to Say When You Talk to Yourself, which helped inform a lot of what I do and what I monitor in my own self-talk as it happens to escape my control. I manifest quite a bit. I tell myself, okay, this is going to go this way. You're going to have this preparation and this is going to be the result. I walk myself through that a lot of times throughout the day. A lot of times I'm speaking to future Rihanna or speaking to myself about what I'm going to do for future Rihanna. So current Rihanna is going to wash the dishes so that future Rihanna doesn't have to, because future Rihanna is going to be super, super busy on Thursday and she's not going to want to deal with this. So let's just do her the favor. I sort of take myself into, you know, that strange like third person moment in order to help motivate me to get stuff done. And then when I get to that point on Thursday, I say, I'm really glad Pastor Rihanna did the dishes, because I would have been really stressed out if she didn't. I think my past self quite a bit. So those are some of the things that show up in my self-talk: is encouragement, motivation, self-talk, manifestation, and then also just giving myself reasons to be good to myself. When I'm in a bad place, my self-talk doesn't sound that way, but I try my best to coach that out. Because I know how important and impactful it can be.
Okay. Dope. I dig it. How are you managing your time right now? How is time management, if it exists for your day-to-day?
If it exists, that's a great qualifier. Time management is tough, especially when you're in the same space all day. Like, there's less of that forced separation between what I'm thinking about and what I'm doing. I sit here and I work, and then I sit here and I have my chats with my family or my friends, and then I sit here and I play or I stream, and then I sit here and I shop online, and it's here. It's all here.
Right.
Which is tough.
Right. It's really tough.
So there's definitely moments where I turn the key light off, I turn off my little light, and I go sit over there and do something. And I might bring my laptop, but at least separating the space. So mentally, I'm in another room and I'm doing something different. It's a different task. But time management is a challenge when you're in a company that feels a lot like a startup, like reviving a TV network like G4 is. I work pretty late. And then once I'm done working, I try to make myself do something for me immediately after, whether that's playing, doing my nails, like watching a TV show, just something that I want to do and it's not for anyone else. And then after that, my day is opened up to like having a super long talk with a huge family chat, or, you know, streaming, or, you know, playing a game with a friend who wants to get into something different, or you know, researching something for a personal project. That's when I do things that are more in service of others. But I try to make sure I have immediate me time as soon as I disconnect from work in order to sort of get me into the space where I'm focused on self-care.
That's dope. Okay, so last question I have for you is how would you like to be remembered?
I'd like to be remembered as somebody who connects people with new ideas, new experiences, new perspectives. I want to be somebody who's unlocks the potential to open people's mind.
Mm. I like that. That's awesome. I had fun.
Me too. This is great.
This is dope. We're still rolling, but where can they find you? All your plugs, where can they find you? And then we'll begin rapping.
Yeah. I stream very inconsistently over at twitch.tv/RihannaTwitchesNow. You can find me most days on Twitter at Rihanna Tweets Now. That's RIANA Tweets Now. And yeah, I post whenever I'm going to stream, whenever the pizza's ready, and whenever I'm going to be doing anything that's not G4 or What's Good Games related, I usually post on Twitter. So that's where you can find me most of the time.
That's awesome. Rihanna, it was a pleasure having you.
Thank you for inviting me. This was a lot of fun.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.